Okay, so thank you very much. I should say that I'm really happy to be back here in Santa Barbara. It's really nice, especially in such a nice group of people. So thanks for the opportunity to talk here. So I want to talk about some work that has been in progress for a long time, but we're writing it up finally. So this has been work with Miguel Costa and our student Lauren Greenspan, and with George Santos, who is a well, he's now in Stanford. He was a postdoc here until recently, and he's the really the master of these numerical techniques that we had to use to find these black holes. So you will see that the precision is really impressive. Okay, so the title is very broad. What is the idea? What do I want to tell you? Basically, the point is that gauge gravity duality is great, right? We love the gauge gravity duality. It provides a quantum theory of gravity. Okay. Very good. In practice, the situation is very frustrating because real predictions from gravity, like regimes of finite temperature where supersymmetry is broken or integrability is not useful, is completely inaccessible from the field theory point of view. So in practice, when you don't have supersymmetry or integrability, you can never compute, you can never compare. So, well, it's just a conjecture, right? So today, I want to tell you about a case, I think it's the only case that I know of, maybe you can correct me, where you actually test gauge gravity duality in the regime where really of chaotic dynamics, you are at finite temperature and no supersymmetry, no integrability, and it will work. And the only way to do it is because we're going to also compare it with numerical calculations in the boundary theory, which in this case is going to be just quantum mechanics. So it's possible to do Monte Carlo, and you can actually compare the thermodynamics of the Monte Carlo of the quantum mechanics at strong coupling with the predictions from gravity. Okay? So this is the context. Let me start by reviewing the simplest possible case. And then I'll talk about a deformation on that, which is our specific work. Okay, so the starting point, let's study 0 plus 1 dimensional supraimmunals. Okay, so this is just quantum mechanics, also known as the BFSS matrix model. So this is what she was telling us about last week. So let me just write the action. So of course you have some bosonic degrees of freedom and some fermionic degrees of freedom. Have the standard interactions. Okay, so probably everybody saw this before. So this I runs 1 to 9, so you have 9 scalars, and this alpha runs from 1 to 16. You have 16 Fermion with 16 real components, and you have this SO9 global symmetry. So yeah, what else do I need to say? This is just the covariant derivative. And all these fields, right, are n by n. So let's do SUN emission matrices, okay? Okay, so the first thing about this theory is that since it's quantum mechanics, this coupling constant, so So here, the toothed coupling, the way I've written it. Lambda is dimensionful, okay? So it's actually dimension energy cubed, okay? So this means that the thermodynamics of this system will only depend on two dimensionless parameters, okay? One is N, and the other one is a reduced temperature, which is basically temperature in units of this toothed coupling, okay? So it's all the thermodynamics will only depend on these two dimensionless variables. Another way of saying it is that low temperature is the same as strong coupling, okay? So the low temperature limit of this system is the one where gravity is accessible. Okay.
So A, the gauge connection doesn't have any dynamics here? Apart from...
Yes, some zero modes. You can... okay. I mean, there's still some zero modes, but there's no degrees of freedom. Okay, so... where should I write this? Yeah, let's go here.
T is
temperature. Yeah, so here I wrote it in Minkowski, but yeah, it's the period in the Euclidean time. Yeah, so this is dimensionless temperature. Okay, so we know the gravity dual of this system. Basically, you can go through the same decoupling limit argument for the D0 brains. In type 2A, you find this black hole solution, take the near horizon. So I will write the solution directly in 11 dimensions. Okay, so I'll uplift this black hole solution of type 2A to 11 dimensions because it will be more convenient for us. Because, mostly because in 11 dimensions, the solution is purely geometric, so the charged black hole becomes just a purely geometric object. Okay. So the gravity dual okay, so R squared is some radial coordinate. You have this S8 that corresponds to SO9, this SO9 symmetry. So this Z is the the 11 dimensional of M theory. So I think I can write it like this. Okay, so this is already a finite temperature, so you have this blackening factor if you want. And in that corner I wrote the map between these parameters in the gravity solution and the parameters in the matrix quantum mechanics. So I, as usual, there is some known map to go from one to the other. So the important point I want to emphasize here is that here you have this, from the 11 dimensional point of view, this is actually a black string, right? The horizon topology is this S8 times this circle. So this Z is, as usual, periodically identified coordinate. And you can do black hole thermodynamics. So just to summarize, so the point that I want to say is that if you now look in this reduced temperature axis, there are several regimes of interest, okay? So let me draw here one, and let me draw here n to the minus 10 over 21, and to the minus 5 nines, and to the minus 5 6. Okay, so what is the point? The point is that as she explained last week, this geometry cannot be trusted everywhere. Okay? So very far away, if you go to the string metric, you will see that the curvature becomes string scale, very far away. Okay? But the idea here is that this is not a big drawback. Because if you're studying thermodynamics, as long as close to the horizon of your black hole, your supergravity solution is a good approximation, since basically the excitations, the low energy excitations are near the horizon, it doesn't matter if the asymptotics actually are not well described by your supergravity solution. Okay? So here, in this region, type 2A is a good description because this is only when this reduced temperature is of order 1, this is where the curvature at the horizon becomes string scale. Okay? So as long as you are at low temperature, it's good. Okay? This is what we expected, because low temperature is strong coupling, so you need that for the gravity to be a good approximation. Then there is this other thresholds, which actually are not important for us, because I'm going to be working in the toothed large n limit. Okay, I'm going to take n to infinity, keeping this tau fixed. Okay, so I'm going to be mostly interested in this limit n to infinity with tau fixed. But in any case, what happens here is that the M theory circle becomes bigger and bigger, and so at this point, if you go to lower temperatures, you go to 11-dimensional supergravity, and then at this point, you start to have Planck scale curvature at the horizon. So here it's Planck scale, so you need to do quantum corrections. Planck scale curvature. But actually, before that, there's a threshold here for the Gregory-Laflamme instability, because this black string actually wants to break before the horizon becomes that small. Okay? But okay, this is not very relevant. The point is that there is this regime of low temperatures, low tau, this dimensionless temperature, and large n, where we can obtain the thermodynamics from this diagram, okay? So what do we get?
So in the region where the Gregory-Laflamme is developed, is there any solution known of where?
As far as I know, no. Yeah, in fact, it's a bit, I don't know exactly what it means, because, right, this geometry has this isometry of moving along the M-theory circle, right? And this is not any explicitly global symmetry here, right? So the Gregory-Laflamme instability will like spontaneously break this symmetry. But that, from the matrix model perspective, is not really a symmetry. So it's a bit of, it's this. Yeah, probably there's a better understanding of this. But I don't understand why this symmetry is, how to understand this symmetry from the point of view of the matrix model. Okay, so just to finish this story, so if you follow this picture, then you can do prediction for thermodynamics, and I'll write for the expectation value of the energy, but it could be free energy or whatever. And essentially, you get this kind of expansion. Let me just write. Okay, so this is the leading large order term, and then you have n squared corrections. Okay. Okay, so this is not obvious, but it's really a simple calculation. So this first term is just classical black hole thermodynamics. Okay, just measure the entropy by the area, then compute. This first term, this second term, comes from alpha prime cubed corrections to the type 2A effective action. Okay, and just by knowing that the corrections to type 2A effective actions come at order alpha prime cubed, you can compute the power here, right? Because you get the scaling from measuring the curvature at the horizon in string units. Okay. However, this C2 is unknown because we don't know all the corrections to the type 2A effective action at. So C1 is known, of course, but C2 is unknown.
But here it's at small temperature, this suppressed tone would be dominating, right? At when tau goes to zero.
No.
No, because it's higher a power. Smaller power, right? Two fifths, I thought it's smaller than
23 fifths.
No, next one, 1 over n squared.
Yes, so this you have to be careful with the regime you are.
Yeah.
So if n is the largest parameter of all, otherwise this can dominate over this if you are not too large.
Not only the first term as well.
It can even dominate if the n is small, yes.
But then
this expansion is breaking down. Yeah. But yeah.
Look, okay, he told you that there are other thresholds. Like
But then it should be.
It's the same threshold.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Coefficients that are not at all using
calculating error. That's what I'm going to explain. So this one comes from, so you see, this is from the string theory point of view, this is a loop correction. But you can, from the M theory point of view, this is a Planck scale correction. So the R to the 4 corrections to the M theory effective action are known. So you can use that to compute this correction to this on this metric, okay? So actually, so this comes from R to the 4 in 11 dimensions, and C3 is known, okay? This is remarkable, but C3 is known. It was computed by Jack Kutake last November, okay? There was a paper that computes this number, C3, okay? And now, I can show you pictures in the end if you want, plots that confirm this, but now let me tell you the results that Joe is referring to. So what people did, so there's this Japanese group of Anada, Nishimura, Yakutake, and more people are involved, Ishiki, Takeuchi. So they've done several simulations in the past years. So one paper that I find pretty remarkable. They study very large n, like 17 in the Monte Carlo simulation. 17 is huge, no? We say large n for SU3 GCD, so that's 17. And low temperature, okay? And so they actually do the plot of the energy, and they fit, and they check that this is the correct power, this is the correct power, this is the correct coefficient, and they predict, right? They fit and they predict. So they give a prediction that you should go compute alpha prime cubed and match what they say. But now, also from last November, they went further and they considered not so small n, like 3, 4, 5, where this, and lower, much lower temperature, where this becomes not the dominant correction, but this becomes the dominant correction. And they also check that this works and this works. Like they have points on the Monte Carlo simulation that match this. Okay, so.
What's the error bar?
I can show you the plot.
Just a percentage. How
accurate? This is hard to estimate. So you can draw this curve, right, analytically, and then you can put some error bar.
Well, let's show us the plot now.
You want to see it now?
Yeah.
It's just that.
It's already a pit, then we will forget.
Okay, good, let's do it. So this is the first simulation. Okay, like N is 17, and you see this reduced temperature. And these are the points, and these are this is the curve, just the first correction. This is with the first alpha prime cube correction in type 2A. And they match.
They're fitting.
They are fitting, yeah. Here they are fitting, yeah.
Right. So sorry, the actual data points from Monte Carlo are the triangle and circle.
Yes, yes.
So it doesn't go to very low temperature. It goes
no, in this point. Simulation they had, yeah, it was very hard to go to very low temperatures. Yeah.
So they assume the real, actually the powers and the first coefficient?
So they do different things. So in one case they say let's leave the exponents as fitting parameters, and they fit and they get the real parameters to within, well, I don't want to risk now, but I don't know, less than 5% somewhere. And then they say, well, let's fix these exponents because we know analytic, and let's just fit the unknown coefficient, and they get I don't know. I would say like 5%. Yeah, it's not very precise. This is hard to, but these errors, you should invite them and ask them about.
Given the set of data points, it's hard to imagine how you can fit some leading coefficients. I mean, it's.
Let me show you then the.
Why?
Yeah.
Why not?
What is lambda?
Lambda over there is the Tufte coupling.
No, lambda six.
This is the cutoff in the. So the way they do this. Monte Carlo simulations. So they have this time circle, right? This Euclidean time circle. And basically they have to discretize. So, but instead of discretizing in a lattice way, what they do is that they Fourier transform, they go to momentum space, and they really put a cutoff in the momentum mode. So this is the highest.
And they integrate out the Fermi?
Yes. So yeah, okay. I mean, this it's not a trivial simulation. So they integrate out the fermion. So in principle, there's a sign problem. They simulate with the modulos, and then they do reweighting with the phase. But the phase is very stable. Somehow, this is also not completely understood. So there's no real sign problem in the end. So it doesn't destroy your important sampling.
Well, that's presumably because they are working at some sufficiently high temperature.
Yeah.
You go down all the way.
Sign problem is there because of the Yukawas in this case, but the fermions will decouple at sufficiently high temperature, and it doesn't appear to be crucial. But as you go to lower temperature, in generic SUN theory, there's a sign problem.
Yeah, no, generically that is, but somehow I think they got better results than they were expecting. But okay, I don't know exactly. I don't know anything more into it. So if you want to see the others, it's even more impressive. So this is the second paper from last November. You see, now they go to even much lower temperatures with smaller n, and this is the curves from the two terms, the terms in blue. So they know everything analytically, so they just plot these curves, and the data with error bars is what you see. Okay. I mean, you really see the thing changing when the prediction happens. I mean, the error bars are not very small, but qualitatively, I think it's really impressive. No?
Sorry, what is this plot? What is E gauge?
It's the energy, the expectation value of the energy in the gauge theory. They call it E gauge to distinguish from prediction from supergravity. Just.
And there are two curves here, right?
This is N equals 3, 4, 5. Where is that? It's there.
Three, four, four.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I probably should continue.
Yeah.
Okay, I hope you are as impressed as I was by this. So we're gonna build on this and consider a close cousin of this model, which is a massive deformation.
If you go from to the high temperature, recoupling, what would be the power of temperature?
I think it's linear with the temperature.
Linear. I think for a smaller power.
That she has some techniques to compute. So in principle, if you go to high temperature, this is you can think it's like weak coupling, and it's kind of weak coupling. It's not completely trivial because what happens is that quantum mechanics reduces to an actual matrix model for the zero modes, right? That because the circle is very small. But this matrix model is still hard. You still have to do Monte Carlo or then some other approach.
Well, you can do a Schoenring-Dyson equation, which is reliable at high temperature. But I think there was a logarithmic dependence on the temperature and the high temperature.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Maybe. I think not in the living term. I think there's some sort of living world. Okay. So sorry. Let me continue. Okay. So now. I'll end it here. So now what I'm going to do is to consider a massive deformation, which goes by the name of plane wave matrix model, or BMN, because it was introduced by Berenstein, Malassine, and Nastase in their famous paper.
So this you don't like because it's supersymmetric, or why are you saying
that? I don't like because actually this doesn't exist at finite temperature. The canonical ensemble is not well defined. So actually this has flat direction, so when you go to finite temperature, this is just metastable. But it's very, very stable. I mean, it's very long-lived. So it's okay, they can do Monte Carlo, it stays there. But it's not really stable.
There's a number of kludges in this calculation. It's amazing. One of them is on this. Yeah. They sort of put a large X cutoff, and it's very close to where the wave function is, but somehow the numbers still work.
Yeah, for this second, okay, good. This is an important point. So for the case when they do really large n, it's really stable. So the Monte Carlo, they just go thermodynamics for all practical purposes. But for this case when they do 3, 4, 5, it's not that stable. So they have to do some tricks. They really like put some boundary artificial, and they try to measure the energy of this metastable state just by like putting it in equilibrium with a gas in a small box and then understanding that. So it's not very clean. That's one of the reasons I want to do this massive deformation, because then it will be stable, you can do thermodynamics, and you will have an extra parameter to a more richer thermodynamics.
Actually, is the answer even well defined for angle 3, 4, 5?
I mean, precisely. For any fixed n, is not a well-defined quantity. If you wait long enough, it will not exist. This will just dissipate. You will just lose all the eigenvalues.
So in the simulation, when the Hell breaks loose, they just throw it away. You know, it tells us, you know. So.
Okay, so here you have massive deformation. So all fields get a mass. And there's this extra interaction term, like Meyer's term. Okay. And so this gamma 1, 2, 3 is just epsilon I, j, k, gamma I, gamma j, gamma k. And so here I'm breaking, so I and j and k just run from 1, 2, 3, and a runs from 4 up to 9. Okay? So I'm breaking the scalars, so I'm breaking SO9 down to SO3 cross SO6. But it's still nice quantum mechanics. So supersymmetry is preserved, although
remind us, this is the same as the reduction manifold form of the free sphere? For square meters in the free sphere?
This is the same as the reduction of manifold form of the sphere if you make mu 1 over the radius of the free sphere. Exactly. And keep only zero mode at the level of Lagrange. So what else do I want to say about this?
Why did you choose different masses for the different subgroups?
I mean, I did not choose. They chose because this is the way to preserve supersymmetry, and that's for this case we know the gravity dual. If I'm just starting putting masses, I don't know the dual.
But it looks like a twisted mass, right? Because you are preserving the same supersymmetry, but breaking as a group. To the smaller one.
I suppose.
It's a different set of supersymmetry, but it doesn't matter, it's again 16 supersymmetry.
Really?
It's a different set of 16 supersymmetry.
Okay.
But in this way, this isometry is changing, right? And it reminds later this.
So there's many interesting things to say about this model. Let me just say, so if you just look at the classical potential for the bosonic matrices, you see it becomes a sum of squares, and there's many solutions. All solutions have this six matrices equal to zero, but the three matrices that form the SO3 can be set to non-zero values of this form, where this Ji is a n by n SU2 representation. Okay, so if it satisfies this, you see, you have this structure here. So all these terms cancel in the potential. So you have many vacua. Essentially, you have, this is n by n, so you can put your block diagonal representation by breaking the, by making this a block diagonal matrix with irreducible representations of the blocks. So there's many vacua, but that's not interesting for us. What I'm going to do is focus on the trivial vacua. Focus on trivial, where all are zero. Okay. So on top of this vacua, and actually on top of every vacua, you have a discrete spectrum of excitations. So, I mean, the canonical ensemble is now well defined, and you have this gap system. So, okay, I don't need to write that. It's also easy to simulate on the computer. So this is, I mean, I'm selling this model not because it's just another model. It's because this is the model I think can be computed with using Monte Carlo. So it's even easier because you have a mass, so it just stabilizes your simulation.
It can still tunnel to the other vacua.
You can tunnel between vacua, but that is also very suppressed at large n.
So there's only one square symmetric vacuum?
No,
they are all exactly.
How many are there?
It's partitions of n, right? Because you can make, this is n by
then,
n.
Then it may overwhelm the saturation due to large n.
Yeah.
So, but if it's done, so what, right?
So that means.
But the question was to improve on what they did, right?
Yeah, no, the thermodynamics is well defined in general. But I guess the problem is that if you do really thermodynamics at finite n, you will like explore all possible phase space, right? And the prediction from gravity is not going to be that. It's going to be, we're going to do on top of some vacuum and build some thermodynamics. So we can also have problems comparing. But OK, let's try. We could even try to refine that on gravity. But so let's start by going to large n and then just build thermodynamics.
You can see in your simulation if you're tunneling or not, right? You can monitor this. If you're still sitting in this vacuum or if you tunneled somewhere.
Yes.
I guess in the gravity side, because you have these bubbling solutions, and you can have some finite temperature deformation of those. So in principle, it should be possible to detect these other vacua or ensembles built around these other vacua from the gravity as well, if you look at this bubbling.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I hope I can talk about that. So let me continue. So the other very important thing about this model is that now you have one extra parameter. Okay, so now you actually have a dimensionless coupling. Okay, which is just lambda over mu cubed. Okay, so this is a real dimensionless coupling that you should think of as like the toothed coupling in n equals 4. And of course, you also have a dimensionless temperature, which is the temperature in units of this mass. Okay, so now I'm going to draw here because this is going to be, you should keep it forever. You have a two-dimensional phase space, which is temperature in units of this mass, and this dimensionless coupling, lambda over mu cubed. Okay? So now we have a two-dimensional phase space to explore, even when n goes to infinity. Okay? So we're going to take the planar limit, and we're going to study the phase diagram here. And so at n equals infinity, this is quantum mechanics, but you can have phase transitions, so we'll study phase transitions here. Okay? So let's immediately study the first. So a tweak coupling, so here, this is literally weak coupling. On top of this trivial vacuum, there's a Hagedorn phase transition. Right? The spectrum, the low-lying spectrum, is made from singlets, C1 singlets, single trace operators, or multi-trace operators. But then that grows exponentially with exponential phi energy times some beta Hagedorn. And so you have a phase transition when you reach this temperature. And this is known. You can compute it analytically. And moreover, people studied how does this Hagedorn transition changes when you start increasing the coupling. And as usual, it becomes a first-order phase transition. So we know here that there's a first-order phase transition.
But let's say lambda equals 0. Phase transition, what is the calculus that governs this transition?
What is it?
Let's say put lambda equals 0.
Yes.
Okay. There is any other interaction here? The one which associated with mu? Because you are saying it's not phase transition, so even at lambda equals 0, right?
Yes, so the point is that here the free energy is of order, is the usual story, right? It's of order n squared. It really sees the degrees of freedom in the matrix. And here the free energy is of order 1, n to the 0. So this is, we can call this the confined phase. And here we can call the confined phase. Okay? And the question is, what happens as you increase the coupling? Okay. This is the question. In particular, we have here a strong coupling limit where we should be able to compute using supergravity, and then we should be able to compare with Monte Carlo. So this is the final goal, is to understand what happens to this curve when it gets a strong coupling, and then compare it with actual Monte Carlo calculation. Okay. So, yeah, for example, I could write, so if you want Tc over mu, well, just for, because I draw it like that, so it has been computed, there's some number which is positive, goes up, and then minus some numbers is positive. Sorry, let me call this G squared. Okay, so this is known, both these numbers are known exactly, so we can really plot the beginning of the curve. This has been computed by Adizadeh, Ramadanovic, Semenov, and Young. Okay, so, yeah, so following the comment of Leonardo, you should look at this picture and remember n equals 4 on S3. Right? So this is really almost identical to what happens in n equals 4 and S3. If you think of this coupling as the 4V toothed coupling, right? And here you think of this as temperature times the radius of the sphere. Okay? But the problem is that there
we know how to compute this at weak coupling, and we know how to compute this at strong coupling. So this is the Hawking phase trace transition. But the problem is that we don't know how to compute this in the computer. Right?
But it is still first order phase transition?
It's first order everywhere. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. So let's talk then about the gravity dual. So we want to understand strong coupling. So what is the gravity dual of this matrix model?
When you talk about conical form sphere, where are Kaluza-Klein modes in this description?
No, this is not equivalent. I'm saying that it's the same, it's an analog system, but it's not an equivalent system. At level of the Lagrangian, you can go from one to the other if you truncate to the zero modes. On this thing.
Could you say that this is a limit of conical form in a sphere of a very small size?
Yes, but that is a bit irrelevant because that's just down here. So you wouldn't see any black hole. This is just a confined phase where you don't excite anything. Okay. So what do we know about the gravity dual? So we actually know a lot. First of all, the gravity dual is very complicated. So, morally, what does it have to be? It has to be asymptotically it has to tend to the plane wave geometry of M theory. Okay. So let me just write that. So this I and this A are the same three coordinates, six coordinates. So this is just R9. And I'm keeping T and Z for the same. And here you have basically the same factors, xi squared plus nu versus xa squared dt squared. OK, so this is an exact solution. So the four form in M theory is just then mu, dt, dx1, dx2, dx3, okay? So this is an exact solution of 11-dimensional supergravity, but this is not really the background. You should think of this as like flat space for the D0 brains, okay? This is the background where you're going to put the D0 brains. So then you have to take the decoupling limit and get the real geometry dual to the theory. So the actual geometries, geometries dual to the several vacua, if you want vacuum geometries, are known. So they have been constructed. So it was this bubbling geometries of Lin, Lunin, and Maldacena, and actually then. Lin and Maldacena did the details in a later paper for this specific case. So I won't write them down. So you can look at these ansatz here that I'll use for my black hole solution. But basically, it's as complicated as these ansatz. So it's, you see, the point is that now the geometries only have this global symmetry SO6 times SO3. So that's what you see here. There's a 2-sphere and a 5-sphere. But then, and okay, it's static, so nothing depends on time or the 11-dimensional. But then there's these two radii, or if you want, an angle that interpolates from one sphere to the other, plus the radius. So everything depends on two coordinates. It's really a complicated geometry. Okay, so these 10 functions, if you want, depend on y, and so think of y as 1 over the radius. So I won't write it explicitly, but essentially what they did is that they expressed all these functions. So all these functions, A, blah, 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 up to the last one, L, in terms of a single function in terms of a single function. And then this single function has to satisfy some Laplace equation with some specific sources. Okay, if you don't know the story, I don't have time to explain in detail, but it doesn't matter. It's a complicated geometry that is the analog. So this, if you want, is the analog of ADS5 process 5. Okay. So this is the price to pay to be able to simulate in Monte Carlo, is that even the vacuum is much more complicated than in N=4. Okay? But in fact, we're not going to use this. We're going to do it, approach the problem from the other side. You see, because we want to study this phase transition here. Okay? And so it means from the gravity perspective, here you will have black hole phase, right? And here there's no black hole. Okay? So for us, it's much better to start from the high temperature limit and start decreasing the temperature. So we will not start from the vacuum solutions. Okay. So we will start, well, I'll put it here. We will start here and then start decreasing, okay? Until the, if you want, the free energy of this black hole crosses zero, right? Because here, this is just vacuum with tiny excitation, so it's order one, while here the free energy is of order n squared, so it is negative. As long as it crosses zero, you have a first order phase transition. Okay? So this is what we're going to look for. Construct a black hole and then compute its free energy and see when it changes sign.
Sorry, hey, could you remind me of the story of phase transition? So for N=4 supernova sound S3, I thought your remark argument was the third order at zero coupling, and then the new corrections make it first order.
It's not every word first order.
Sorry?
I mean, only exactly at this point. You mean here, exactly at zero coupling, it's first order.
Third order.
And everywhere is first order, then it degenerates here to collide.
So this is exactly analogous to N=4 around three sphere?
Yes.
Excuse me. I thought that there was a black hole in the plane wave background that was found earlier by Veronica, Lumini, and some collaborators. Is that? And you're going to find new black holes, I guess. But
yes.
But wasn't there a black hole that was found?
Well, actually, I looked at the paper a long time ago. I don't remember exactly the details, but we should discuss it. I remember seeing that, and it was not what we were looking
not
for.
Not what you need for some reason.
Okay. Yeah. I don't remember now exactly. So this is done. Okay, so let's. So what's the idea? The idea is just. So as I said, we will start from the high temperature. What happens at high temperature? Well, at high temperature, okay, first of all, this is the ansatz. So what is the starting point? The starting point is just this solution, right? It's just at zero mu, right? At temperature much larger than mu, you go back to this D0 brain. Okay. So let me write here. If you set f equal to m equal to l equal to 0, and all the others, a equal to b, all the others equal to 1, then you go back to this solution, okay? So this is our, what we call the reference metric. Okay? The reference metric is going to be the original D0 brain without mu. Okay, so to do that, you have to do this small change of coordinates. This part. Okay, that's just a change of coordinates, doesn't matter. This is more interesting. So actually, the way the ansatz is written, everything is dimensionless, right? Because we're going to do numerics, so we have to want everything dimensionless, okay? So the actual physical metric is going to not be exactly the ansatz, but there's going to be some rescaling. Okay? But that's okay, because that's a symmetry of the action. In fact, even if you in this case, you don't have turned on A3, but then A3 will be turned on, the three form. So if you also rescale A3, so if A3 physical is R0 cubed A3 of the ansatz, then this is a symmetry. So the action, the 11D action, just rescales. So if you want 11 physical is R0 9 ADM. This is going to be important because it's going to simplify our thermodynamics. So that's why I'm just commenting on this trivial rescale. Okay. So, and now I'm not going to tell you all the details. Basically, you just have to go and do numeric. So what do you need? First, so all your functions live on a square, right? So you have this square from 0 to 1 and pi over 2. A rectangle, and one is the horizon. If you look there, one is the horizon. This is asymptotic infinity, and here is when the spheres collapse. So theta equals zero. It's the S5 that collapses, and here is the S2 that collapses. Okay, and so what do you need to do numerics? You need boundary conditions. Okay, so boundary conditions are very tricky to implement in practice, but here at this level it's very simple. So so you just impose regularity at horizon and the axis of symmetry. So essentially, here is the S1, the time circle, the Euclidean time circle that collapses. Here is an S2, here is an S5. So this is all axes of symmetry. They are not real boundaries. So you just impose regularity on the metric. Only here, it's really more physical. This is infinity. So here you have to define what you turn on and what you turn off. This is where you read like normalizable and non-normalizable modes. So at y going to 0, which is asymptotic infinity, essentially you have to require that this geometry is asymptotically plane wave. Okay. So basically, and also, well, let me just tell it. So basically, all these functions a, b, t1, t2, t3, t4, go to 1. Right, like here in the reference metric, right? They go to 1, and f goes to 0, and then the tree form is the important point, because then in the tree form you have to input the fact that it has to go to plane wave. So that's where the parameter appears. So this goes to mu hat cosine cubed of theta over y cubed. Okay, and there's something similar for L. So the only point, I'm just doing this because the only point is that mu hat is the only parameter. Okay, this is the only parameter in this numerical solution. And then after that, what you have to do is just put your PDEs on a computer. So there's two main steps involved. The first one is to use what's called the Dirac method. So I'm not going to explain this. This is basically, if you just put Einstein's equations, they are not really elliptic because you always have diff invariants. If you don't, so here we didn't fix all the coordinate invariants. So the best way to do it is to add an extra term to the Einstein's equation that makes it completely elliptic. But then on the solution, this term actually vanishes. So the solution you found is really solution of Einstein's equation. So I mean, George Santos is really a specialist in this. He has been doing this for a long time. So this part is just some algorithm that you implement. And then after that, after having really elliptic PDEs, you just discretize. So we discretize using spectral methods, what just means that the grid is not exactly uniform. There's like more points close to the boundary than in the middle. And this is some technical issue, but essentially the way you approximate the derivative involves all points in the lattice. So you take like polynomial approximations to the function using all information. So this gives you exponentially. So why is this good? Because if your solution is analytic in this domain, then you get exponential convergence to the continuum solution with the number of points in the grid. Okay, I can show you some plots that show that exponential convergence. Good.
That's not the most computationally sensitive part of your computation. Now you have to do simulations, Monte Carlo simulations. That's where the errors are going to be.
If this is done properly, yeah. No, the way this is done, yeah, this is...
This is just solving some static equation. People know how to solve
it's
binary
not,
black hole.
Okay. First time I saw this, I was scared. Maybe I read like 10 functions for a PDE, 10 PDEs for 10 functions, so 10 coupled PDEs. Looks scary to me, but
okay.
I don't know if it's not. So, if you go through this rescaling, okay, so this argument, so here you of course get some dimensionless solution, you go to this rescaling, so this mu hat is of course related to this ratio, mu over t times some number. And then, now we can study thermodynamics. So just to finish, let's study thermodynamics. So, yeah. There's just one trick that we had to use. So let me just explain that, and then I'm finished. So suppose you want to compute the free energy, right? That's what we want. So the trick is to look at ratios. So let's look at the free energy when both T and mu are non-zero, divided by the free energy of the zero brain, well, when we set mu to zero, okay? So of course, if we compute this in gravity, this is just the ratio of the actions, right? Okay? It's just the ratio of the actions. But now here, the on-shell actions. Here we use this trick of the rescaling. Since we can rescale the temperature away using this change of variables and this symmetry. Okay, this symmetry is important, but R0 only depends on the temperature. Does not depend on mu. So basically, you can use this scaling to write this as this. This is some fixed temperature, let's say 1 and mu hat over. Okay. You rescale temperature out and it cancels. Okay, so this you define as a function just of mu hat. Okay, but this is hard to measure actually. So you can do the same for the entropy. Look again for the ratio of the entropy. And this you define as A of mu hat also, because just from this rescaling argument, it becomes just a function of this. And so this is easy to measure, right? Because this is just you have the numerical solution, you just measure the area of the horizon. And you take the ratio when mu hat is non-zero divided by the ratio when mu hat is zero, okay? And now you use first law. Okay, you just use first law. Okay. Essentially, you use this form of the first law, and if you use this together with the fact that you know the explicit solution for the D0 brain without mu, right? You know f and t. You get a first law for these reduced functions. 5 or 14, or the opposite. Okay, and so what we do is, let's measure this, and then solve for f here, okay? That's the only thing we do. Yeah, and basically in practice what we do is that we have a of mu, we approximate by some polynomial, because it's, I mean, we have dots, right? Numerical dots, tak, 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 approximate by some polynomial, max, and then f mu becomes a similar series. Okay, so I can show you a picture of the results, but basically, well, I think I can show you. Any question about this? It's clear, right? It's just a classical thermodynamics.
Have you done Monte Carlo as well? Or?
No. Okay, so, well, you can see here numerical convergence. So, what can I tell you? Yeah, here, maybe this one is better. So here is that you measure the area when you do the discretization in n points, and with n plus 1 points, and you compute this difference, and you see that this is converging exponentially, right? You see 10 to the minus 25. As you increase, so now the grid is 40 by 40 points. Okay. I don't know. Slav is not impressed.
No, no, no. I think it's an overkill, but.
No, this is really. Jars makes
the imprecision on the simulation side.
Oh, come on.
Why is it linear?
This is log plot. Okay, so okay, this was just numerical convergence. Okay, this is one observable you can measure. So the black hole gets deformed as you turn on mu. So it starts spherical, but then so this sphere, I mean an S8, but then the S5 and the maximal S5 and the maximal S2 become different. So the maximal S5 becomes bigger, the S5 grows and the S2 shrinks when you turn on this mu, so you can see this deformation. And here is the observable that I was describing. So you can look at the free energy. So this is the reduced free energy. So it starts at 1 because it's a ratio, and then it changes sign. So this is the critical value. And if you convert to our standard numbers, we get I think I have a picture here. Yeah, okay. This is the phase diagram that I was drawing. So basically it doesn't change. I mean, if you actually put in the numbers, it's extremely, but this is if you go to n equals 4 on S3, it's also similar. It changes also by a small, very small number, the critical temperature. So, okay, so this is the main result of all this effort is that you have now this critical temperature. And well, we don't only have that, right? We have many, we can measure VEVs in this ensemble, right? We can measure vacuum expectation, not vacuum, thermal expectation values of observables, of operators in this, because we can read off asymptotically the normalized Vohm modes in the solution.
So, this is an inner This is the first term you're thinking of. I mean, they had four terms.
This is the first term, yes. Yeah. Just the first term.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, basically, I can tell you that there's many more things to study and questions. So nobody asked, but of course, it's not clear if this is really dynamical stable. What we are finding right now, this is becoming a pancake, so it could develop instabilities. So in that scenario, if it develops an instability, then you could go to another black hole with a different topology. So probably this S5 wants to grow. So maybe you go to S5 cross S3 topology, because this, some kind of higher dimensional black ring. But even if that happens, I mean, if you decay, the free energy is going to be lower. So for sure, at least here, you are in the deconfined phase. Maybe here, there is still a black hole that dominates. But so you have like an upper bound to the critical temperature, up to the, if you care about this caveat. Okay.
So 0 means number 091 is the target for it.
Yes, this is what
you might have been double blind.
Lattice is good to confirm results, right? To actually get the results in that sense. Okay, so I should finish. Thank you very much.
They're going to do the
That's okay.
Who's going to do the
We also are, we have a postdoc in Porto which does Lattice QCV, LB by linears, and we are trying to do it, but we are also trying to convince them to do it.
There were already some simulation results for plane wave matrix model.
Yeah, so they actually simulate in a much more complicated vacuum, right? So that you can take this plane wave matrix model and go to a vacuum where you break this into this SUN representations in many blocks, such that in the large end, if you take the large end limit in an appropriate way, you actually recover S super angles on the tree sphere, at least the planar limit, some kind of Higuchi Kawai reduction. So this matrix model can be used to compute the leading large end effect in super angles.
I really didn't mean that word. I knew about it, but I meant the word by Simon and Toby Weissman.
Ah, good. No, that's a good point. Okay. So there is work of Catterall and Greg Van Anders, where they tried to explore this phase diagram, but it was very preliminary. So what they did, so basically, well, okay, they don't use the same technique. They really discretize time. And do a more classical lattice gauge theory approach. And they what they did was to fix some T over mu equal some fixed number, and then they run just one line here. Okay? They explored one horizontal line. And actually, it's a puzzle. I've emailed them because I try to be careful translating what they did, and I think it's up there. They explored a line up there. Like four times higher than this. Okay. So they shouldn't have seen anything. And they saw phase transition. They claim they saw. So I don't know what was the problem. I mean, I'm guessing this curve is monotonic. It could not, maybe it's not, I don't know. But the most likely scenario is that there's some problem in converting units, and they actually simulated here, and they found some transition here in the middle. But This is a puzzle. This is something that is unresolved. I asked them already.
Is there any way to do a microcanonical ensemble? And because there will be more structure.
You mean
diagonalize the Hamiltonian?
Fixed energy.
Yes. And change the energy. Calculate the entropy as you change the energy.
So you mean now you could go to the other? No, but why would that be?
There is more structure there. There you should see also the strings. You mentioned Hagedorn. You should see the Hagedorn. You should see more structure there. Here you just see the first order phase transition.
Yes. Yes.
Is it feasible if you want to do it?
Yeah, there are these methods of like multi-canonical Monte Carlo where they actually, instead of simulating at a fixed temperature, they are able to obtain the basically the entropy as a function of energy, yeah, to reconstruct that. Yeah, that's a good point. I think nobody tried that in this context.
Would it be feasible to do to check alpha trend correction?
I don't know, it looks complicated. But so on top of this numerical solution,
or maybe
corrected, maybe, I mean, people do fluctuation analysis on top of numerical solutions, so.
Maybe just the sign, because you have this nice monotonic line, but it says that it's about fluctuation.
Ah, just to know if this comes from above or below.
Yeah.
That's true. Right, maybe it's possible, but it looks very hard.
One more question slash remark. This is all anti-periodic boundary conditions for fermions. Presumably, if you use periodic boundary condition, change the spin structure for fermions, presumably there should not be any phase transition to the confined phase. Yes, it's also called that. do you see that? I mean, it would be an interesting check, you know, the absence of phase transition.
Yeah.
Just because it is trivial from one perspective, it's not trivial from the other. You know, indeed it is with an index, but at the same time these are systems which exhibit Hagedorn growth, and you know that means that there is a very delicate cancellation of the Hagedorn growth between bosonic and fermionic sector theory. We indeed expect that, but I wonder whether there is something more exotic going on if you go to very small L with this.
Tom, is from the matrix model side or from the bulk?
I was thinking on the matrix model side, because but on the bulk side, that would mean that there are not competing geometries, most likely, right? There is probably a unit geometry or something like that.
I think the matrix model side, you have the sign problem if you have the supersymmetric boundary condition.
Yeah, you do. But so on the other hand, it's a Newton index, you know. So, for simulation wise, you are saying it may be different. Yeah, you are right.
I mean, I can the matrix model, I don't think.
Yeah. For SU2, it doesn't, so.
Any other questions?
Are there observers with computing gravity from zero temperature? Because I think this matrix model seems to be integrable at zero temperature, is that correct?
You mean integrable?
Integrable in the sense of large M integrability. There were some papers that studied the planar expansion using similar techniques as in any force experiments. There are all these interpolating functions that can compute the entropy of force pyramids between Wickerson coupling at zero temperature from integrability.
But so you want to study in gravity, but then
I don't know. I'm asking whether there are similar checks that could be made. In some sense, they're less interesting because they're less dynamical, they're using some integrability structure, but.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, probably a big part of the story can be repeated here, but as you said, the point is that not to repeat the story, to be able to do something that we cannot do in any cost form.
Just one more So you mentioned one of the motivations to consider the mu deformation is that on the matrix model side you have more control. But actually,
sure,
the regime of mu where it actually helps you compute the free energy, where is it on the plot? Does it actually help you in the regime where you can compare to gravity? Maybe because if the mu is, you need mu to be especially large for that to help you. But if mu is very large, you are down at
You mean in this plot?
Yeah, because if mu is large, you'll be below that the baseline. I mean, at the bottom of it.
I mean, so you have these two. You can be here arbitrarily far, right? By increasing the coupling, counting up this coupling, and then this is still other one, right? This transition. So here.
No, okay.
And if n is. And this doesn't move in n, so if n is very, very large, you suppress tunneling between vacua. So this is a well defined.
I just want to get a sense of how much, to what extent the turning on the mu actually helps you from the most part of
time. But you say if the black hole is unstable, it will release some eigenvalue, but now the eigenvalue can come back, right? So even in the matrix model, the picture is that you have this metastable state, but now it's in equilibrium with the gas. So then it's really stable. So that's my understanding.
If mu is too large, the black hole horizon will spill over into the sphere stringy regime, and you can no longer trust the gravity. So you need the.
But that's T related with this. I mentioned full two coupling, right? And here you can decouple the two stories. You can have T over the mu, but this is still much larger. Okay? So T in units of the two coupling is very, very small. So you can, it's two different limits. Right? The stringy effects were T in units of this two coupling. Okay?
Well, but it cannot be that you can just increase mu arbitrarily and still trust the gravity solution. Because eventually you just get some very massive matrix model, you can just get some analytic, weakly coupled. That cannot be the case. I mean, if you increase mu at a certain some point where the horizon becomes stringy or getting into stringy regime.
The point is that mu is dimensionful. You have to mean mu increase with respect to what? With respect to temperature, we are the one. But with respect to the coupling, it will be small compared to the coupling, to the dimension of the coupling. So this parameter can be arbitrarily large and still have T and mu. I think what you're saying that would reduce to weak coupling is when this parameter goes there. And then it can be coupling.
Okay.
Let's thank you all.